I'm Derek Thompson, longtime writer with The Atlantic Magazine on tech, culture, and politics. There is a lot of noise out there, and my goal is to cut through the headlines, loud tweets, and hot takes in my new podcast, Plain English. I'll talk to some of the smartest people I know to give you clear viewpoints and memorable takeaways. Plain English starts November 16th. Listen for free on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Ringer NBA show presented by FanDuel. Take a shot at betting the NBA with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Right now, you can check out the new and improved Parlay Hub. Filter by odds, sport, and bet type to easily find the most popular parlays and same-game parlays all on one page. Plus, start betting on the Explore page and the Pulse and bet live same-game parlays for every NBA game. So download the app today and bet with FanDuel, official partner of the NBA. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available and listen to the end of the episode for additional details. Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com.
This episode is brought to you by Arby's. People come up with all kinds of excuses not to try Arby's. Things like, nobody eats there, Bill. Isn't it just roast beef, Bill? Come on, Bill, only grandmas like it. Well, excuses end with Arby's Free Sandwich Month. Arby's Rewards members get one free sandwich with purchase every week in April, online only. Now trying Arby's doesn't sound so crazy, does it? Join Arby's Rewards and order ahead today.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Weekends with Waz on the Ringer NBA podcast feed. Of course, I'm Big Waz, a.k.a. Wazzy Lambrain. I'm joined by a very special guest, Amin El Hassan of Metalark Media, of Sirius NBA Radio, of the Cinephobe podcast. I mean, yo, Amin, I feel like you actually one of the few multimedia cats out there in the sense that TV, radio, podcast, web shows. I mean, there's nothing you haven't done in the multimedia space, bro.
Yeah, I was gonna say technically I haven't done, or I'm not doing TV anymore. So that it, but I have done it. So
yes,
it's on the checklist. There was a time I used to say that I was the only person in all the world who was doing TV, radio, podcast, digital videos all at the same time. That was a truth, and live streaming at the same time. I don't think that's the case anymore.
We got, because over here at Spotify, we got Green Room. Obviously, there's Twitter Spaces. There's all this other stuff. This live stuff where people can interact. I'm not going to hold you. We was doing that in 2014, 13, bro.
Eight, nine years ago, we were doing what they're doing now.
Yeah, that was all the rage.
With interactivity and all that stuff, so. I mean, it's crazy to see where the industry has gone, and it's cool. And it's also like, yeah, you know, oh yeah, I remember when I used to do that.
Exactly.
My first beer.
Anyway, so I got you on the show today, Amin, because I wanted to talk about two Eastern Conference teams, the Bucks, which we'll get into later on. But first, I want to talk about the Chicago Bulls, because I feel like outside of the Warriors being like really freaking good in a way that I don't think a lot of people expected, I feel like the Bulls story is probably the most like surprising in the league this year, and just how great they've played with injuries and all of that stuff. They've managed to be like one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference, if not in the entire NBA. And first, I wanted to know, what was your thought of the offseason before the season? Because I know I was wrong. I just didn't think they were going to be able to defend nearly as good enough to be this good. What did you think about the moves they made in the offseason?
Right. I thought, so here's the thing. And part of this is some stuff that we can say we were wrong about. And part of this we could say, well, still hasn't borne out yet. Mm. So the part that we were wrong about, I thought they made good moves. I liked DeMar DeRozan.
Me too.
I really like Lonzo Ball. I really like Alex Caruso.
Yeah.
Like, I like those guys. Hell, I even like Vucevic if you want to go back to last trade deadline. But my thing was like, is this a team that is going to excel at an elite level? The reason I ask that is, like, what have they given up in return beyond the salaries owed to Caruso and Ball, which I didn't think were out of the ordinary for them in a vacuum, but combined with what they want to pay Zach LaVine in the near future, and more importantly, the picks they gave up, because they gave up two to get Vucevic. They gave up, I believe, two to get DeRozan, and then Lonzo. So it's like, all right, that's, if you just told me this is my squad, I'm like, okay, it's like, well, what did I have to give up? When you start to describe, you're like, I don't know. I don't know. That seems like a lot for a team that I thought at the time had a ceiling on how good they could be. Fast forward of halfway through the season, and I can say, all right, they are really good. I didn't think they'd be this good. And you know what? Because of what's happening in the Eastern Conference, maybe they might be good enough. Maybe they're not good enough to go to the finals. But having said all that, I still think, A, they're not going to be good enough to win a championship, which most teams don't, let's be honest. But the cost on the back end, because whatever they accomplish this year, I think we can all agree, this looks like it's going to be the best of it. It's not like next year they'll be even better than they were this year. Chances are Brooklyn fully healthy without having to worry about a vaccine mandate, which we assume will be done in a year or so. That's going to be a better team. Milwaukee fully healthy for the whole season. That's a better team. Miami fully healthy is a better team. Philly, whatever they get done with this Ben Simmons saga, better. And then you throw in the Charlottes and the Clevelands and all the other up-and-comers. I'm not saying Chicago is going to be eighth, but I'm just saying, like, it's still going to be a little bit of a harder climb than what this season has been.
Yeah, because I do want to get into the this season of it all, right? Because right now they're 17th in defense, which is down from what it was earlier in the year.
Right.
They're seventh in offense, which, like, they're basically right there with Charlotte, Miami, Phoenix, Brooklyn, who's at the top, like, who's above them, right? So they're clearly one of the elite offenses in the NBA, and I think the question still remains, right? We see Caruso went down, one of their best defensive players, with a wrist injury. The question to me remains, like, what's it going to look like in the playoffs when people are attacking Vooch and they are attacking DeRozan and they are sort of, you know, pardon the pun, but bum hunting on offense? I don't know that this is going to be able to hold up in the postseason as presently constructed.
Again, so I think part of it goes back to what we're talking about, is that when healthy, you have Lonzo Ball, you have Alex Caruso, you got Derrick Jones. Like, these are all defensive players. These are guys that do well and switch and guard larger than what they are and can cover for what DeRozan and Vucevic can't do. But this is the case with every NBA team. The more injuries you have, the more people we take off the board, the more your weaknesses are accentuated. The more it's obvious, hey, now these guys can't defend. And remember also, Patrick Williams only played 5 games this year. This is supposed to be their starting four. This is supposed to be a dude who is guarding everything 1 through 4, maybe even 1 through 5. And they don't have him available. So they've had to do a little bit of kind of like rearranging, and Javonte Green gets some time. And as I said, Derrick Jones Jr. had his time and whatever. All of these things are contingency plans for what the intended plan was. So when we talk about getting to the playoffs, again, I can tell you what I thought would happen at the beginning of the season. I thought this team would be a six seed or a 5 seed, get to the playoffs, get knocked out in the first round. Now I'm like, well, maybe they're a second round team. But I still think if Milwaukee is reasonably healthy, if Brooklyn is reasonably healthy, even with Kyrie not being able to play home games, and if Miami's reasonably healthy, I take any one of those 3 teams. And if Philly gets a deal done for Ben Simmons, I might take them as well. And I don't want to say this like to rain on the parade of people in Chicago.
It's a fun story.
It's a fun story. And also, yo, kudos. You guys are a lot better than everybody thought you'd be. No one's out here saying like, yeah, you're still garbage. I'm just saying that these accomplishments are tempered with the still very real flaws that they have to live up to in a playoff situation.
All right, so I do want to talk about Zach LaVine, the Zach LaVine thing, because, you know, a lot was made in the offseason. Like, he's at the Olympics. They're asking him about the Bulls and his deal. And I remember, I'll never forget watching the clip, because our boy Brian Windhorst asked him the question. And he said, and he was talking about his deal. And he was like, all I want is respect. Which, mm-hmm. like, is just a strange, it's mm-hmm. a strange way to frame.
Not strange.
And I want you to get into it, but I just wanted to say that, like, when they brought in DeRozan, first of all, I think it's proven that DeRozan is a complementary player to what mm-hmm. LaVine does, because he's so good at setting people up, right?
Right.
And he doesn't operate in the same areas of the floor that LaVine does, so it's very complementary. However, it felt like Chicago, with as much as they paid DeRozan, it felt like he was like a ballast against LaVine. If he was like, yo, supermax me, fam. Like, I'm supermax, or get out of my face. Like, do you think LaVine has made himself supermax? I don't even want to say worthy, but just like, he has to get the supermax? Or, you know, what is your feeling about the LaVine situation? Because I think that thing is still lingering.
All right, so first of all, I don't know what ballast means, but I'm going to take it as disrespect.
Yes.
Shout out to Kevin Hart and 40-year-old virgin. You going to be a nigga, you going to be my nigga. Like, here's the deal. The Bulls were faced with a very real Sophie's choice in the offseason. Zach LaVine is our best player. We love him. We want him here for a long time. We have an opportunity to do an extend and renegotiate, right? Meaning, usually you can't renegotiate much in the NBA. But when you have cap space and you have a player who's making less than what the maximum allowable is for them, you can renegotiate, meaning taking their existing salaries and give them bumps on all that and then add a couple of years on the back end. That was one option. Option two is, get this guy help. They chose option two. They said, Zach, you're worth it. We know you're worth it. But to pay you and say, we're coming back with the same group of guys that has been not good enough in the last couple of years, it's not going to change anything. We have an opportunity to go get DeRozan, an all-star, a dude who's a very productive scorer, even last year in San Antonio, as everybody forgot him, and an effective playmaker. I think people forget DeRozan, like, last couple of years, San Antonio has been doing crazy, like 6-7 assists a game, you know, like 25% plus on the assist percentage side, right? And then also, and I think this is key, because DeRozan obviously helped offensively, and getting Ball and Caruso helped them offensively. I talked to Arturis Karnišovas and Billy Donovan before the season started, and that was their thing. It was like, we wanted more playmakers. We didn't want the burden of making offense happen to fall strictly on LaVine. But the other part of this was, and this is the part I didn't anticipate, which was what Lonzo Ball and Alex Caruso would do defensively for this team. Being active, being disruptors, stopping the attack at the point of attack rather than all this rotating and stuff on the back end. And they were awesome. And they lifted this team to be an awesome defensive outfit. And that helped tremendously. And then DeRozan could just focus on being great offensively and all the other things happen, et cetera, et cetera. So they made that decision. And I think we can all say that was the right decision.
Yep.
But obviously, if you're LaVine and you're like, where my money at, right? And when he says, that's why I disagree with you, said saying respect is a weird way. Respect for NBA players comes down to like, how much are you getting paid? Did they pay you every allowable dollar that was allowed under the salary cap? That's what it comes down to, right? Because that's how they compare the sums to one another. The example I always bring up was, I remember when I was with the Knicks, my first year with the Knicks, or my only year with the Knicks, I should say, and it was 04-05, and Stephon Marbury at the time had always been saying, I'm the best point guard in the NBA. I'm the best point guard in the NBA. This is a time when there were only two people in the history of the NBA who had career averages of 20 points and 8 assists. Oscar and Steph Marbury. So he was like, I'm the best point guard in the NBA. So he had obviously been traded from Phoenix to New York the year before. Phoenix in that offseason signs Steve Nash, signs Quentin Richardson, signs Stephen Hunter. And literally the rest of the roster is the same dudes. And they went from being a lottery team with Steph Marbury
to top of like the West.
they started the season 31-4, something right. insane like that.
Right.
And you know the New York media, because the rabble rousers they are, they all rushed over. Like, hey, Steph, you said you were the best point guard in the NBA. They pretty much just flopped out point guards, and they're 31-4, bro, with the same roster you had that was like struggling.
Yeah.
And Steph said, well, last I checked, I got a max deal, and he didn't. So you tell me who's doing it right. And that right there in a nutshell is how NBA players think.
Right.
The greatest sign of respect is when they're like, I wanted to pay you more, but literally the league said this is the most I could pay you.
Right.
Right? Like, they're handcuffing me. They're taking me away, bro. I want to give you more money, but no, get up.
Right. Right.
So when you're dealing with that situation, that's how the measure of respect goes. If you're Zach LaVine, you can say, the rational part of you will say, wow, I got a much better team. We got a chance to win a championship, whatever. But the irrational part says, hold up, bro. Are you saying I'm not worth this money? Why wouldn't you give me this money? It's the same thing that happened to Kawhi in San Antonio, where it's like, hey, if we don't extend you before your fourth season, this gives us a lot more flexibility next offseason. And we'll still pay you.
Yeah.
And they still paid him. But that shit sat with Kawhi. Like, they thought twice. Same thing with your boy Gordon Hayward. Yep. The Jazz said, go out and get an offer, and we'll match it.
Go out and get a max offer sheet.
And we'll match it. And we'll match it. And they did. And they did. But that shit sat with him. Like, okay, that's how you felt.
Soon as I can get out of here, I'm out of here. So, but I wonder though, like, because you mentioned all of the financial commitments and asset commitments that they put into bringing in these new guys, right? The Bulls are a rich team, but they rarely ever operate like one. And so that's when I'm like, are they going to give Zach LaVine $40 million a year over 5 years when they have the opportunity to?
I think they will when... I think they will because of what this team has done this season, right?
Got you.
It's proven they are competitive. And also, we know for a fact that with this draft obligations that they have, you don't have a choice of saying, okay, so this is the 1 year back to the drawing board, right? You have to do this stuff. Otherwise, you're in trouble, right? Otherwise, you gave up all these picks for a team to watch LaVine walk away. So as I pull it up right here, these are the picks they owe, right? They owe, let's see here. They owe, scroll. They owe a first round pick to Orlando. They already gave the one to Orlando prior to this.
This is for the Vucevic deal. Mm-hmm.
Yep. They have a second round pick that's forfeited due to their involvement in tampering. They have a second round pick that they owe to the Lakers. They have a second round pick that they owe to the New Orleans Hornets in 2024. They have a first round pick they owe to San Antonio. They have a second round pick they owe to San Antonio. So they've got two firsts that they owe over the next three drafts. And they've got one, two, three, four picks they owe and a fifth one in the second round that's been forfeited, right? Meaning, look, we don't have a lot of leeway to add talent to this team on the cheap.
Yep.
This is your squad other than minimums and exceptions. So at that point, do you say to yourself, well, you know what, Zach LaVine, I don't want to pay you $40 million a year. You know you're not as good of a team without him. And you know you're avid. It's not like, but we'll have $40 million in cap space. No.
No, you're not going to have 40. You're over the cap by a lot already.
By a lot. Because you paid Ball. You paid DeRozan. You paid Vucevic is still paid for one more year, right, before he becomes a free agent. Even Caruso at $9 million. And that's not counting, you know, Patrick Williams' extension that they'll negotiate this next offseason, et cetera. So the reality is you're sitting here saying to yourself, if I'm not happy with this team, letting one dude walk isn't going to be enough. And knowing when they were together and they were healthy, hell, we were pretty good. So I think they're going to pay him. They're going to pay him. They're going to try and make it short. They're going to try and make some outs on the back end. Right. But I think they're going to pay him.
Zach LaVine going to get his money. That's good. I'm happy for him, man. That brother really wants his paper. and he's not playing about it.
This episode is supported by State Farm. Man, I remember when I first got into a car accident, it was pure frustration because I did not have State Farm. And now that I do have State Farm, it is an exclamation of pure joy. But the only words that you need to remember are, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm has options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Learn more at statefarm.com.
This episode is brought to you by Arby's. There are so many excuses not to try Arby's. Things like, who the heck is Arby? I don't feel like a sandwich right now. Or how many times do I have to tell you? I'm vegan! Well, excuses end with Arby's Free Sandwich Month. Arby's Rewards members get one free sandwich with purchase every week in April, online only. Now trying Arby's doesn't sound so crazy, does it? Join Arby's Rewards and order ahead today. This episode is brought to you by Visible Wireless. Don't miss the premiere of your new wireless savings with Visible. It's time to switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. That's no hidden fees. No, really. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
All right, so we move on to the Milwaukee Bucks, man, because I think the way things are shaping up right now, the injuries in Brooklyn, the weirdness with the vax cards and all of that, I think even, you know, Draymond hasn't been playing, but even still, Golden State has begun to show some of their warts as a team. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Phoenix has been excellent all season long, but they got their butts kicked by the Bucks in the finals last year. I feel like things are shaping up that the Bucks are the championship favorite to repeat again. It feels like they're not getting that type of attention and not getting that type of enthusiasm, both in the media and just generally what it feels like online. But to my mind, the Bucks are the favorite to win the championship right now. What have you thought about the Bucks season so far?
Yeah, I think they're one of the favorites. It's hard for me to say.
Wait, you go on, I need the audience to know that Amin has always been annoyed by Bucks playoff performances and that he's like, there are ways that this team could clearly and easily be playing better.
So much better.
And they don't.
So much better.
You know?
So much better.
Just so people know, Amin has an annoyance with playoff Bucks. Can you explain just a few of the things that the Bucks don't do in key situations that just drive you up a wall?
Okay, so one of them is on defense, and people don't talk about it a whole lot. People focus on the offensive one, which is the more obvious one. But defensively, they have this thing where it's like, we go balls to wall chasing after the point of attack. But then if you happen to be a team that can, like, get the ball out and swing around. Oh, well, like, so the Bucks, if you look at the numbers, they've given up more, the most, if not up there, of three-pointers in the league. More open three-pointers in the league. More corner threes in the league, right? And that's all indicative of their defensive style, the way they were trying to stop it at the start, but not really have an answer at the end. And what happened to them in 2019 was they played a Celtics team that I believe won game one moving the ball. And then everything after that was Kyrie trying to do his N1 mixtape tour, which of course plays into what Milwaukee wants
to
do.
What they want. Yep.
They won. They move on. They play Toronto, and Toronto moved the ball and got open shots, and Milwaukee lost four games in a row. And then the next year they play Miami, and Miami is one of the best at ball movement.
Yep.
And three-point shooting. And that's just something that I was saying, like, in February, like, yo, before, pre-COVID, if the Bucks play the Heat, no, I don't care how dominant they are, if they play the Heat, they're going to lose. Because their defense is so not compatible with the way that he play offense.
Right.
It's the worst type of defense you would play. And then last year, obviously, they had their moments where it looked touch and go, but they got like the breaks that every champion needs and they end up winning. The other side is the offense. That's the part that I think they have gotten better at, which is this realization that just because Giannis is our best player doesn't mean you have to give him the ball like he's Kobe.
Exactly.
Or LeBron.
Or KD. That's not him.
He's not. He's Shaq.
Exactly.
And what I was saying during the season, because remember they had the game against Phoenix earlier that season where they're down two and the play call was, we're going to give it to Giannis 30 feet from the basket,
and
he's going to dribble ISO, and he pulled up for 20-footer. He missed the shot. They lost. And afterwards, both him and Budenholzer was like, yeah, that was the play, and if we had the opportunity to do it again, we'll do it the same way. And I'm like, who are you trying to, who are you trying to pull this to? It would be like throwing Shaq the ball at half court, like, get us one, big fella. Yeah. Look, we all, like, Waz, you and I both remember the Shaq and Kobe Lakers.
Of course.
Kobe's a great player. He's a Hall of Famer. Top 50, top 75, all that stuff. But also, we recognize that Shaq was the better player on that team.
Yes.
Shaq carried that team.
He was the focal point of the team.
Yes. He is the alpha and omega. But teams down two or three,
they didn't give the ball to Shaq from 17 feet and say, Shaq, operate. No, they gave the ball to a good perimeter player, or in the case of Kobe, a great one, and he was able to set things up. And the funny thing about the Bucks is, like, they have the guys that can set up perimeter action and get Giannis the ball maybe on the move or closer to the basket so that he could be a finisher.
A bang bang, where it's like, if you're going to foul him, it's going to be an and one.
Yeah. And they did more of that in the playoffs. There were times when Middleton was like, him and Giannis was running a two-man game. And Giannis is sitting punishing screens. Middleton only needs a little bit of daylight to score. But again, like, Giannis is making that happen, right? Like, him setting a punishing screen and the amount of gravity he has, it's opening airspace for his teammates. Like, he's still hugely contributing to a great end result. Is just not glory, 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 hallelujah. Giannis is our savior. We gave him the ball 30 feet and he made something happen. Like, that ain't it.
Right. And I think it was funny because early in the playoffs, when they had their struggles, and you had people saying, like, I'm not talking about fans or people on Twitter. I'm talking about, like, people are paid to watch basketball for a living. Maybe Chris Middleton is the Batman and Giannis is the Robin. And I'm like,
give me a break.
What are we doing here? what are we doing? Like, so you guys want to boil down the entire game to the last 2 minutes of the game?
Right.
Like, that's cool. I get it. You got to win those 2 minutes. You got to win the other 46 too. And this dude over 46 minutes was unstoppable. And if you run your offense the right way, where if he gets a touch, that means we already dunking this thing.
Yep.
Which is, again, what we saw during the finals. Then you're fine. But the problem was what they did early in that year and early in that playoffs, and indeed all the years before that, was they were treating him like he was a ball-handling perimeter playmaker. And he's not that. He's a big. He's a big who can handle a little better than your regular big, but he's a big in the way you should think
about it. He's a finisher. Yeah. He's not an initiator. He's a finisher. So I do want to ask you, because, like, obviously it sounds like you don't have the amount of conviction that the Bucks, like, this thing seems sided for them when it comes to the injuries and the unreliability of some of the guys in Brooklyn for various reasons. And,
right.
And I want to say this because people do make a big thing about the COVID stuff with Kyrie. Kyrie has not finished a season for his team in, like, half of the last six seasons. If not more than that, if my math, I know there was a Boston season he didn't finish, several Cleveland seasons he didn't finish. Last year he didn't finish with Brooklyn. Like, he's always getting hurt. So forget about COVID.
This is what he's done the last few years. 54 out of 72 games last year. The year before that, 20 out of 70, whatever games it was. I never know what 2019-20 was because of, you know, how many, you know, every team had different number of games they played. 2018-2019, Boston, 67 out of 82. The year before that, 60 out of 82. The year before that, Cleveland, 72 out of 82. But then the year before that, 53 out of 82. So he's never played 82 games. He's never played. He's played 75 games one time in his career.
That's crazy.
And, you know, most of the time he's playing a significant amount of less games where you're noticing. It's not the usual 9 or 8 games missing, right? To me, it's not even about Kyrie. To me, it's about Harden. Mm. This is a guy who's lived his entire NBA career, first of all, since he got to Houston at the very least. I play every game. All right. Number two, I play a shit ton of minutes.
Yeah.
Number three, I'm not just standing out there. Balls in my hands. I'm taking a lot of contact as I play this very physical style. Right. Year after year after year, up until last year when he got to Brooklyn, and it changed a little, but it was still a lot of games, a lot of minutes, and maybe the workload's not as hard because you've got one of the two of the other guys, but still there were games where he was by himself. Then you take that and you say, oh, by the way, lights to get after it. I'm not here to judge. We all enjoy a nice night out, right? Man. But I think if you do a poll around the NBA, eliminate the role players, just give me NBA superstars.
Yeah.
Where do you think he ranks on gets after it versus I'm going home with a nice warm glass of milk and a book?
I can say anecdotally, I mean, from I've seen the guy out a decent amount and just conversations with people who would know, I feel like he's at the top of any superstar list. And I don't think he's got much challenge at the superstar, especially at his age. I think some of the young guys.
Okay, you're hopping ahead because what I was getting at was like, look, I'm not saying that you come in and he's horseshit the next day. I'm just saying he's living life to the fullest.
Yeah.
This isn't a guy who's getting 9 to 10 hours of sleep and, you know, resting and staying off of the things that may be detrimental to your body and your health. That's who he is. Again, I'm with it. I'm all for freedom of choice, and as long as you can do your job, fine. But here's the problem. You've got the minutes, the games, the workload. I'm not doing the LeBron in terms of 7 figures on my body and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And then you throw in 32 years old, about to be 33 years old. He was 20 when he got drafted in 2009. It's about to be 2022. It's 13 years. So he's 32 to 33 years old this year.
The mileage plus that's not the maintenance. Lot. Yeah.
That's exactly. A lot of mileage and no maintenance. What happens, there are people who say, James Harden, can't trust him in the playoffs. He's a choker. I don't think he's a choker at all. I think he's every bit of a great player. I think what we're seeing is a dude who's tired and broken down. And this is the most important part because I named all those factors. But then when you throw in everybody else he's playing against is playing with this different math. Mm-hmm. They're not. Steph Curry's not playing 82.
He's not.
And he's not playing 39 minutes.
Nope.
And he's not getting a beating. And he's not going out night after night.
Yep.
And Durant, for the most part, even though in Brooklyn he's starting to do more of that stuff, right, hadn't been doing it. And LeBron's not doing that. And et cetera, et cetera. And so,
and yeah, Jimmy Butler's not. And Giannis is not.
Yeah. So you could say, hey, I'm the tough guy who plays every game and every minute and da-da-da, and this will make the old heads respect me. But like I say the same thing. If Michael Jordan, who played 40 minutes a night, 82 games a year, looked around and saw Patrick and Charles and Karl Malone and all these other dudes resting and playing less minutes and coming to the playoffs fresh and kicking his ass, you don't think Michael Jordan would be like, give me some of that load management shit right now.
Yeah.
Because the goal is to win. The goal isn't to be the toughest guy. If it were, then we'd all say AC Green was the best player of all time.
Right. Because
he played every game, right? Right. That's what it's about. So I say all this to say that when I look at Brooklyn, the big flaw I think about is that James Harden, I think, especially now, Durant's out. Kyrie can only play road games. What you're going to see is this dude's load is going to go up significantly, and he'll do well because he's great, and they'll win games, and they'll stay afloat, and they'll get to the playoffs, and they'll get hurt or be worn out. And people say, oh, told you he's not reliable in the playoffs. And I'm like, you wore him the fuck out during the regular season. What you want?
Yeah.
You got to pick which one you want.
So, okay, you've outlined perfectly why Brooklyn seems like very, very beatable playoff opponent for the best teams in the East. If Milwaukee doesn't make it out of the East, why does that not happen?
I mean, I look at one of two scenarios. One is that the Sixers have done a trade that's made them reimagine them. Mm-hmm. And Embiid is amazing. I don't know that a combination of a healthy Brook Lopez, which, by the way, we're still a ways away from seeing, and Giannis playing the five, and Bobby Portis, like, that's, none of those guys are either good enough or big enough to make a difference there. And then, like, you fill out the rest of their roster, now you have other decisions you got to make. I think Philly has an opportunity, depending on the deal that they make, and I don't know if they're going to make one or not. And then the other one is their old nemesis. I think Miami's always going to be a thorn in their side because they're a team that plays outside in, where they've got a guy in Bam Adebayo who can guard Giannis probably as well as anybody in the league.
He can do a credible job at it.
He can do a credible job at it defensively. Then offensively, since he's so weird and out there, it makes things difficult for Milwaukee to adjust. And then obviously they move very well. They're an excellent three-point shooting team. So I think Miami and
a reimagined Philadelphia.
A reimagined Philly. And then obviously if Kevin Durant's healthy, the dude's the best player in the conference, if we're going to be honest. So
yeah, so, you know, I just feel like things are shaping up pretty well for them. As long as they have their three guys healthy, I think they're going to be a whale of a team come playoff time. Yeah, and I think that just the confidence they've gained. Because, like, I watched them in crunch time now. Like, again, it's regular season, but you can tell when teams have that look of confidence that, like, all right, we know what we have to do. Maybe, you know, make a misleading shit might happen, but we know exactly how we need to get to the type of shots we want in crunch time situations. Like, they have the look of that kind of team. I think they gained that confidence last year and again against some diminished opponents, but whatever. They got the confidence.
Exactly. It doesn't matter. Yeah. All that matters is now they've seen themselves be successful in those situations. It's like, oh, yeah, we can do this.
Exactly.
Whereas before, there's that mental block of, like, here we go again, whereas everything's going to go wrong.
And so if I'm hearing you correctly, you're just basically like, this is a matchup-dependent thing, which, of course, the NBA playoffs always is. But you think the Bucks are right there at the top as far as championship teams in the league this year?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I would say, to me, Phoenix and Golden State are a cut above everybody else.
Okay.
But then, like, everybody else, like, is... No, I'm not saying it's out of the question, but I'm just saying not quite. Phoenix and Golden State, to me, are the two best. And if Golden State's healthy, I'm going to confidently say I think they're going to win the championship. Because, I mean, they just have a style of play that's so different. For most of these teams, you talk about meeting and matching up, right? The difference between a regular season matchup and a playoff matchup is we get to sit around and game plan for you. But the reality is the game planning, not exactly the same, but it's fairly similar. A lot of pick and roll, a lot of guard play, whatever. And then you play Golden State, and it's this whole thing where people are moving and the ball is moving and everyone's a threat. And I think it's so different from what teams play 82 games against that it gives them an advantage. Is it an absolute advantage? No, obviously it can be overcome. But I think when they're at their best offensively, it's so different. It's harder to stop than any other offense in the league. And then on the flip side, defensively, we know they are elite at that. They get after it. And, you know, they've got so many guys that are versatile. And then when you have two guys and Draymond Green and Andre Iguodala are just geniuses, literally. Genius of basketball players. It makes life that much more difficult.
All right, man. Amin, thank you so much for coming in today. This was amazing stuff. Please tell the people where they can find you and your work, because you're doing a lot, man. You're working like an African. Yeah. I'm telling you.
Well, true to my creed, you know. basketball-wise, I would say SiriusXM NBA Radio. I appear multiple times in a week, so you can catch me whenever. Metalark Media, I'm on the Levitard Show, so catch me there periodically. I have a basketball podcast I do with Tom Haberstroh called The Haber Show. Catch that as well. And then outside of basketball, I would say Cinephobe, that's the podcast where Zach Harper and I watch movies that are poorly rated on Rotten Tomatoes and try to ascertain whether they're accurately poorly rated or maybe they get a fair shake. It's Cinephobe. It's produced by Anthony Mays. You get it wherever you get podcasts. And I think that's it for now. I might have a couple other things that I've forgotten, but, you know, maybe when they start paying me a little bit more, I'll remember to mention them.
I love it, man. That's our show for today. We'll see you guys next week. This was Weekends with Waz. We out of here. Peace. Hey.